Hello, Twitter bird. Tweet a little tweet on Twitter. Any little thing will do.
Every single tweet's a winner. You can do it too.
Yes, tweet a little tweet on Twitter. Everyone will know what's new.
Tweet a little tweet, it's up to you. In 140 characters, I'll tell you what I eat.
On Twitter, I post random artsy pictures of my feet.
I'm staying up to date with friends while walking down the street.
Yeah, Twitter's pretty sweet.
I'm literally Twittering. My life is now complete.
It's literary littering with every single tweet. You think that you're so cool, retweeting things like tools. You're all a bunch of fools.
Not you. You're not all a bunch of fools. These people and the Twitter people. We are in our fourth week in a series called What Would Jesus Tweet? Now, Jesus, I don't know, this might come as a shock to some of you, but when Jesus was walking planet Earth, there was no such thing as Twitter. So Jesus didn't actually tweet anything. So that's why we're posing the question, what would he tweet? Not what did he, that would be a whole different series. And the idea behind the series is back in this day, rabbis would teach the people, and what the people would do, we're going to spend the next few weeks going through Matthew 5, 6, and 7, and it begins by saying Jesus looked out, saw the crowd, went up the hill, his disciples gathered around his feet, and he began to teach them. So the idea is, let's try to gather around Jesus' feet. Let's circle around Jesus and try to figure out what he would say, because Jesus had some pretty different ways of thinking that are different for us. They were different at the time. They were very countercultural then, and they're very countercultural now, meaning the people outside, the people that aren't a part of the family of God, live one way, and we see that maybe that's not the best idea for how we live. And then it's counterintuitive, which means sometimes that's not even necessarily how I would do it. But Jesus, you say, like, there's a part where it says, if someone slaps you in the cheek, our world says, then you ball up your fists and you punch them back, right? If they slap you, you punch them. If they stab you, you shoot them. You know, right? We've got this one-upsmanship in this world. But Jesus says, if someone slaps you in the cheek, man, just turn them the other one. Wait, what? That's weird. But there's got to be a reason. There's got to be a why behind the what. And so what we've been doing is Twitter. How many of you know Twitter? Okay, Twitter is 140 characters. You blast out your thought, comes back. Maybe people follow you. Maybe if you're lucky, someone favorites it or somebody retweets it, which means it was good enough in their mind that their followers need to see it again too. So 140 characters. The Beatitudes is 12 verses. How do you get that down to 140 characters? Well, good news, I did it. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, the sad, the meek, who hunger for righteousness, the pure in heart, the peacemaker, and the persecuted. You laughing at my heart? A less than three. Blessed are the pure in heart, the peacemaker, and the persecuted. Be glad, your reward is in heaven. You see what I'm saying? Countercultural, counterintuitive thinking of God. Blessed are the poor in spirit. How many of you would raise your hand and say, I am looking forward to being poor? Blessed are the sad. Mourn was too long. I didn't have enough characters. I had to figure out a shorter way to say mourn. But blessed are the sad. How many of you would say, I'm pretty sad right now, and I am so happy about it? I can't even contain my excitement about being sad. Or for us, meek. We commonly equate meekness with weakness. How many of you know somebody, maybe they work with you or they're at your school, they do something where they're just meek and people just walk all over them. There's a phrase, they're known as the doormat. They're the people that just get walked all over the time. So how many of you would say, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting walked all over? But Jesus is saying, man, if you can be meek, you can inherit the kingdom. Wait, hold up. So there's got to be, so we talked about that week, those kind of things. You can go back, cityviewchurch.tv/media. Our sermon archive is there. Then the second week, we had a guest pastor, Jason Cooper, came in, and we talked about this. You are salt on the earth, light in the world, a city on a hill. give flavor and light to the world so others see God and give him glory. And salt back then was a preservative. It wasn't a flavoring thing, but it was a flavoring thing. They didn't have to add salt because their food was just caked in it, right? But this idea of being a city on a hill, what did that mean? So we talked about culturally, these people would understand that they lived in a very mountainous area, and so they would build cities up on top of these hills so that travelers at night could look and see where the different cities were, and they would know where they were and where they needed to go. And so he's saying, you need to be a city on a hill. You need to be someone who lights up the darkness so people know where they are and they can see how to get to God. And that's the kind of church that we want to be, is that we want to be lights in this world. Paul even says the same thing over in Philippians chapter 2:15, where he says, in this twisted generation, amongst whom you shine like stars. And so we talked about that. And then last week, Jesus said this to us. I didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Relax one and be the least, but keep them and be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Jesus didn't come to abolish the law. It means he didn't come to destroy it, but he came to fulfill it. So we talked about those kind of things. And today, we're going to see something that really at face value looks like the Bible immediately contradicts itself. Right? I didn't come to abolish the law. I came to fulfill it. And then this is the next section. Here's what Jesus says. You've heard it said, this is Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 21. You've heard it said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you, so we'll pause right there for a second. Last week, Jesus says, I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to fulfill it. And then this week, Jesus says, you've heard it said this, but I say to you this. Wait a minute. It sounds to me like you're saying that that law was broken because you're teaching us a different way. This is not the same thing, and we're going to talk about why that wasn't, but let me finish reading here. Let's see. Liable of judgment, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and then put you in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid every last penny. Now, you see all that, and you think, how in the world can you get that down to 140 characters? It probably can't be done. You probably need to do multiple tweets on that. You'd be wrong. I got it down to 139. It's a skill. I got it down to 139 with... Oh, man. I was good on this one. It said, don't murder. Hate is the same thing. Make amends before you come to worship and then give your gifts to God. Move first before you go to jail. Hang on to that last line. Move first before you go to jail. We're going to wrap our whole morning up with this idea of what that means, but we're going to talk about the rest. Jesus, he wasn't coming to abolish the law. He said that last week, right? He was coming to confront two things. First thing he was doing was coming to confront the superficial, I told you, internal monologue. Most people were just moved on, but I did not. Superficial understanding of God's law. Back then, the rabbi would teach. He would tell these stories from the Old Testament, and then people would go back, and they would know more about God, but their lives wouldn't really be changed by that. But what Jesus is saying is, I'm not interested in you knowing the stories. I want you to know the God behind the stories. And that kind of leads us to this idea of these books for these young men. I grew up going to church sometime in between the 22 months, between when I was born and my brother. Some of you have heard this story. my parents decided that raising us in church was the best way to go. And so we went to church. My whole life, I don't know not going to church. Felt called into the ministry on a mission trip to the north side of Chicago when I was 15 years old. I felt pretty certain that I was supposed to work for God and do this thing. But then I get to the end of high school, and I'm faced with these decisions. Mom and Dad can't tell me to go to church anymore. I'm a man. You guys are going to find out that that's not true. But that's what I thought. So then I started wondering, am I a Christian just because that's how I was raised? If my parents didn't go to church, would I just believe whatever? Or, if they were another religion, maybe if I grew up in the Middle East, would I be Muslim? Or is this whole God thing real? Is this whole Jesus thing real? For graduation, I was given books, and I was so mad. Somebody gave me two books, and this book cost $12, and this book cost $24, and I thought, man, you could have just given me $26, and then they could have given me $26, and $26, and $26, I had $104, and that would be way better than these stupid books. I just graduated from high school. I've spent the last 13 years of my life with books. And now I'm thinking about going off to college and there's more books. And you guys think I need books? Just these books. What's with the books? Well, then I had this kind of crisis of faith. And is any of this real? And it was the books that I was given as high school graduation presents that I turned to. There's a book called A Case for Christ. This guy named Lee Strobel, he's a journalist, and he wrote a book as though he were publishing a newspaper article, each chapter defending it. He was even going to people who would be experts in certain things and saying, yeah, I used to think this, but then I explored and I learned, and this is this. And so, man, okay, Jesus was a real person. Okay, this actually leads some credence to the way that my parents raised me. Jesus was a real person. And then a couple of years later, he wrote a book called Case for Faith. If Jesus was real, is believing in him, is following him worth anything? And there was another book about being Christian in college and how all sorts of options come out. And I don't know how many of you have seen the movie God's Not Dead, about this philosophy professor that tells his class that God is dead. In this classroom, I am God. And so if you do not agree with me, then you must be prepared to defend the antithesis. And so this one student stands up and says, and he defends the way that he believes. And that's one of the books that I was given as a high school student, was how to stay Christian, how to really follow Jesus, how to find a group of Christians in the middle of a school that doesn't seem to have any. And so I give you these books not because I couldn't have given you $26, but there's a book in there called Greater. And in that book, it says that God has great things designed for each of us, no matter how small we think we are. Whether you come from a town of 25 people or a town of 6 million, God has something greater for you. And then there's another book in there called Aha. It's by Kyle Eidelman, who wrote God's at War and Not a Fan. He's an author that really wants people to follow Jesus with all that they've gotten. And this book is about that aha moment, this moment that kind of is a catalyst for everything else that you've gotten. And I really thought that these two books would send you guys out believing that there was something that God wanted to do with you. It's not just something that the world has for you. There's not just a job. It's not just going to clown college and learning to tie balloons, but there is something, there is a mission that God has for you. And that's what Jesus is saying here. I haven't come to abolish the law, I've actually come to fulfill it. And more than anything, I want you to know the God behind the stories than the stories. And so that's the first thing that he was saying. And then the second thing he was saying is he was confronting this idea of church as worship. Earlier we had worship. That was when the band was up here playing songs, and then we stopped worshiping and we moved to announcements, and now we're doing teaching. Later, we'll go downstairs and have coffee and snacks and goodies, but worship was the part where the music happened. That's worship. That's the common idea. When I was 18, I wanted to be a worship pastor, and the only idea that I had was music. I wanted to be the music guy, and the longer that I have experienced these things that God has for us, the more I realize that this thing right here, and this isn't just worship. We started out this morning in musical worship, and then we moved into worship of prayer. And we talked about how we can worship God as a community out at the park, how we can worship God through the celebration of changed lives. Now we are worshiping through the teaching of the word. Later, we're going to go downstairs and we're going to worship God through having, this is the best news all day. You can worship God by having cookies and having coffee. So if you're like me and you wish Will could tailor all your clothes so you look slimmer, well, that's fine. I've been doing a lot of worshiping when it comes to eating food, right? So, but then the on your way out this morning, you are going to worship God through the giving of your tithes and offerings. And the things that we are able to do when you worship God that way is show people last Sunday afternoon that maybe church and God isn't everything that you thought it was. You see, this isn't the sum total of worship. So what Jesus was saying here is if you've come to worship and you bring your gift, whether it's music, whether it's teaching, whether it's monetary, and you realize that somebody has something against you, and then you leave that thing there and you go to them. You make it right with them. You worship God through making right, because that relationship that's broken will hinder your ability to meet with him in times of musical worship. And it sounds like right now, maybe I'm telling you the way you need to live, and I'm really setting up something that I have dreaded telling you all week long. This whole section is titled in my Bible, Just Anger. And, you know, in the Catholic Church, you go to confession, you sit on one side, priest sits on the other side, and you confess to the priest, and then the priest tells you how to be made right with God. This morning, we're going to do something a little bit different. And I'm going to stand in front of you, and I'm going to make confession to you, my sin, where I've been for the last 3 weeks. You know, last month, we had a series. It was Foster Care Awareness Month, and we had a series called The Spirit of Adoption. In Romans chapter 8 and Ephesians chapter 1, Paul writes talking about the spirit of adoption, how we, when we step into the family of God through the cross of Jesus Christ, are adopted in as sons, and we receive the spirit of adoption. We are heirs. We are brothers with each other, but we are brothers with Christ, and we stand to inherit the kingdom. And that's what happens when you step into the family of God. And then we talked about what that looks like for us to be moved on behalf of people who don't have a family of their own, how we can mirror image God's accepting us into his family by us bringing people in to his family. And in the middle of the series, my wife and I became the foster parents of three kids, the most beautiful little girl that you could ever hope to see. The sweetest little boy that anyone could ever... I mean, this little boy wants nothing more than to have a dad. I can't hug him and get just one kiss on my cheek or my head. He has to kiss all the way around my face before he can go to bed. Just the sweetest little thing. And a little girl that would rather just stab me with a pencil than look at me. And it makes me angry because I haven't done anything wrong. It makes me angry at whoever did what they did to make her think that living this way is okay. It makes me angry at God that she has to experience such brokenness. And then we're here doing church, and I got people telling me that I'm not doing it right. You guys know over the last 16 weeks, we have seen 60 people. 60 people in 16 months. That would be way awesome. In the last 16 months, we've seen 60 people say that they're ready to step into the family of God. People who were spiritually dead are now spiritually alive. And I got people asking me, why aren't we raising people from the dead? And I say we are. We've got 60 people who were spiritually dead, destined for hell, and now they are spiritually alive, headed for heaven because of what God is doing here. And that makes me angry. And that makes me angry because I'm not doing things right. Now, normally, if I wasn't dealing with all this other stuff, that one wouldn't bother me as much. Because I've been doing church for a long time, and I'm used to the people that sit in your chair telling me that I'm not doing it right. I'm used to that. But because I am mentally, emotionally, and physically exhausted, well, that makes me angry. And I find myself taking my anger out in the wrong places. You know, we already had two children, a young man and a young woman. And my daughter is one of the most helpful people on the planet. She's 10, so she's got moments where she might be the most selfish person on the planet. But that comes with being 10, right? But most of the time, she's so helpful. And one day I was struggling with this little girl. She just doesn't want to get dressed. So I dress her. She takes it all off. I dress her again. We go out to the car. We're getting buckled in the seatbelt. It's almost over. This frustration is almost over. We're about to go off to school. And my daughter sticks her head out the door and says, "Daddy, you forgot her medicine." And this little girl who was calming down is now angry again. And she's yelling at me, "You forgot to give me my medicine. You forgot to give me my medicine." Now she's trying to take her shirt off, and we're going through it all over again. I can't do this. So I go inside, and I'm trying to talk to my daughter. I'm trying to tell her, "Listen, I know you were trying to be helpful. But in those situations, you got to just let it go. Whatever I forgot. If I sent her to school with one shoe on, you got to just let it go." The whole time I'm talking to her, she's digging through this basket. Looking for, "What are you doing?" "I'm looking for a pencil." I grabbed the pencils. I grabbed the basket, and I threw them down the hallway. And I said, "Good luck finding your pencil now." And I had to step back and say, "What is going on?" And I knew that I had to come here today and I had to preach about, you've heard it said, "Thou shalt not murder." But I say to you, if you are even as angry at your brother or your daughter or your friend, if you say "you fool" to someone, then you're liable of the judgment. And now I have to stand here in front of you and teach you something that I can't even handle on my own. And so I'm praying to eat a bad burrito or something. Which the problem was I didn't eat the burrito. I'm praying to God that I could just go somewhere, get a bad burrito, and get sick this morning. I don't have to be here. Pastor Jay, step in, save the day, because he is meek, he is humble, and he could teach you from a place of, "I know how to deal with this." Guys, I hate apologizing. I would rather walk on nails than apologize. This week I've had to apologize to my children so many times. And I had some great advice from someone one time. And so instead of apologizing to my kids, because I'm bigger than them for now, instead of apologizing, I have to fall to my knees so that I can be lower than them. to say that you were in the right and I was in the wrong. And I need you to forgive me. And in that moment, I wanted to say, I need you to forgive me. But if you had just looked at me, if you had just waited on the pencil, BC, is that a real apology? No. And now I have to ask you to forgive me because I haven't led you the way that I'm supposed to. You see, we go through this spirit of adoption thing, and I'm not just angry at them, but I'm angry at God. Because God, you've given me this vision. You've shown me a way to raise up a church to look out for the least of these, to look for these kids who don't have families. Wouldn't the best way be for you to bring kids into my house and it be easy? Wouldn't that inspire people to say, hey, I could do that, and then you guys could deal with the hard kids because I got the easy ones, right? And that's what I'm telling God. I'm saying, God, if I were you, I would have done it this way. And see, last week, he says, I didn't come to abolish the law, but I came to fulfill it. Relax, one, and you're guilty of all of them. And so I didn't kill anybody. But in my anger, I'm sitting here telling God, if I were you, I would have done it this way. And then one of the commandments is, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And so I have superseded myself over him because obviously he doesn't know what he's doing. There's a family in our church who has two kids that are, you know, close to my kids' age. And I look at them and I think, your kids are so great. They're so perfect. If I had your kids, they would be so much more helpful than my kids. And so now I'm coveting my neighbor's kids. I'm not coveting my neighbor's wife, but here I am coveting my neighbor's kids, which is another commandment. Relax, one. Guilty of all. I get mad at people for telling me that I don't know what I'm doing or I'm not doing it the right way. And I'm angry, but I need you to forgive me because I don't know everything. And I don't have a proprietary line from God. Church is not me telling you where to go and what to do. But church is us listening to God and doing it together. And so I need you to forgive me. Thank you. And here's where it all lands down. The last of it says, come to terms quickly with your accuser. And while you're going to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you've paid every last penny. R.C. Sproul, in his commentary on this, he writes this, were it not for the murder of Christ, we would go to that place from which we would never be released. But our Lord was murdered for us because we are murderers. We have committed murder in our hearts. We have committed murder against him, but in that murder comes our salvation. Relax, one, guilty of them all. And so as Jesus hung on that cross, his murder, his brutal execution was my fault. But were it not for my fault, were it not for me putting him on that cross, there would be no way for me to be made right with God. Now, Paul would say, now, should I keep sinning so that grace may abound more and more? No, let it not be so. So, because something bad happened and something good came from it, doesn't mean that I can keep doing bad things. But even in the fact that I am a guilty, filthy sinner, Jesus knew exactly who I would be, knew exactly what I would do. He knew exactly who you would be. He knew exactly what you would do. He came to earth and died in your place anyways. We just sang it. He lived the life you could never live. He died the death you fully, completely deserve. And he rose to life. And now he lives. And that is how he forgives. And so you forgive by saying, I apologize for what I've done wrong. And you say, I forgive you. That's not how God forgives. God sends his only son to die. Not to give, but to purchase forgiveness for you. I love you guys. I love leading this church. And you might group up together after church and say, we can't have a filthy sinner lead us like that. And I will say, you're probably right. But you're not going to find anyone else. Because we're all filthy sinners. And you may be here this morning and think, man, I'm not sure I like it that my pastor struggles. Well, that's who we are. You got a pastor who's a filthy sinner. And I'm not happy about it. But Jesus died to clean that up for me. And I'm in the process of being made whole. I'm in the process of being molded into his image. And hopefully, I stop throwing baskets of pins down a hallway. You know, I had this anger problem when I was a kid. I had to go to counseling, and my version of counseling, I was going to get my counselor from back then to record a quick little video of you guys so you could hear it from him, but I went and sat in his office. This doesn't really have a lot to do with anything, but it's a funny story. I sat in his office for 45 minutes, and I stared at him. And I love to talk. I really do. I could talk all day. But because I was told I had an anger problem, and because I was told I needed to get it under control, in my anger, I just stared at him. And I hated him. I hated him for no other reason than he was drawing breath on planet Earth. And now we've come to this point in my process of being molded into the image of God where I know that I was wrong. And I've apologized to him. And now I just throw baskets of pins down the hall. I don't just stare at my daughter and hate her. I wonder how many of us are carrying around this anger and this frustration that needs to be let go of. Maybe you're like this little girl who's angry at a dad she never had. Or she's angry at a mom who taught her that men are the enemy. Maybe you're angry because you're sick. Maybe you're angry for any number of reasons. But I don't believe that God intends for us to live that way. And that's why he says, blessed are the meek. They shall inherit the kingdom. Not the weak, not the doormat, but the people. Blessed are the people who know that it's time to drop to your knees and say, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I need you to forgive me. And I might do it again, but I want you to know I'm trying not to. There's only one way that to happen in us. So we're going to wrap ourselves up this morning by singing out this song that says, Holy Spirit, you are welcome here. Not just here in this room, but you are welcome in my life. I need you to flood this place and fill the atmosphere. The atmosphere is what we breathe in. We could not live on planet Earth unless our atmosphere was appropriate for us to breathe. And we need him to fill our atmosphere, that we could not continue to live were it not for us breathing him in every moment of every day. And maybe you find yourself in this place where you've never stepped into the family of God. You've heard for the first time that Jesus stands to put all that back together for you. I would love nothing more than to talk to you after church. Send you out with a book. You know, I love to give away books today, apparently. But send you out with something. Get you hooked up in a small group so that you can grow, so that you can be molded into the image of God. So the band's going to come, and we're going to sing this confession, that there is nothing worth more. Nothing will ever come close. Our living hope is the presence of God. Every minute of every hour of every day. So God, help us to live in that. Let's stand and sing.